You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio and welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week during the show, I'm really fortunate to be able to share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener, and this week is going to be no different. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the world of people all within the STEM sector. And to do that, we're joined by local expert Emma Browning of Meraki HR. So really look forward to that conversation. This is a Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I really look forward to introducing Emma to you after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're talking about a sector which is so successful here in Oxfordshire. We're talking about the world of STEM. And to do that, we're joined by people expert, the owner of Meraki HR, Emma Browning. So firstly, welcome, Emma, and thank you for joining me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Lovely to be asked. Thanks, Ben.
No, thank you. Emma, for those who don't know you and don't know your business, can you introduce yourself? Is that okay?
Yeah, of course. I will do my best to keep it succinct. So my name's Emma Browning. I'm the owner and managing director of Meraki HR. We started 11 years ago in Oxfordshire, and we primarily look after STEM clients from a people perspective. So anything to do with people, whether that's right at the beginning stages, you know, helping them design a recruitment advert or place an advert, or actually right up to sort of developing people within the business or dealing with any of those day-to-day people issues people may have. So everything in that whole people life cycle we deal with.
Amazing. And really look forward to learning more about that over the rest of the show. But the only non-business related question I'm going to ask you, and I feel like I always build this up every week, is you need to be a radio DJ just for that moment. So you've kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
So I'm a bit of a 90s indie girl at heart. So I chose The Verve, Unfinished Symphony.
Oxfordshire Station. Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. That's a good song choice, Emma, so thank you for that. We're joined by Emma Browning of Meraki HR, who are an Oxfordshire-based firm who provide really great HR support and people to support to STEM and other businesses here in Oxfordshire and beyond. So Emma, I always like to start with quite a big question, if that's okay. So there's a STEM is huge in Oxfordshire, and there's lots of startups within the STEM space. So let's start with startups. How do you get the foundations in place to ensure that you've got a really good people strategy? You're hiring your first person. What's the first thing to do?
Yeah, and I think that's such an important question, because you're right. You know, if you think about the fact that so many small businesses make up a huge proportion, don't they, of the business sector, sometimes recruiting that first person is really daunting, because you suddenly think, my goodness, I've got all these responsibilities now that I'm going to employ somebody. What do I do? I think the first thing is to get some really good HR advice locally, try and keep that sort of small business supporting other small businesses. So it's really important you get some HR advice. But the first thing is you've got to have a really good contract of employment in place, because that's your legal agreement between you and that person. But then the other side of it for me is it's good to have all the compliance boxes ticked and make sure you're doing things you should be legally. But the other side for me is, as a business owner, it's really starting to think about what do I want my culture to be in this business? What's my values? How am I going to make sure that when I start my business, those good foundations are in place? Because we often have in our minds what we want our business to look like or feel like, not just for us, but for the people who work in it. But we don't necessarily write that down. And making sure then, and you'll know this, Ben, from the recruitment side of things, that fit is so important, and that fit comes from your culture, your values. So we really help those STEM businesses that we work with to think about that from the beginning. Because once you've got, and if you're ambitious and you start to grow and you've got 5 people, 10 people, 50 people, when you don't have those really good foundations in place, all of a sudden you start to say, hang on a minute, this is going wrong. And when you wind it back, and we can wind it back because we've got all that experience, we wind it back to, do you know what? It's because we've never said what it is that's right for our business. That culture, the values, those foundations aren't in place. So get the compliance bit done, and then make sure you think about that culture and the values piece, because that will make sure you're hiring people who've got the right values as you, the same values as you. And we find that when that happens, there's a lot less people issues to deal with.
No, absolutely. It's a really, really interesting point. I was actually speaking to a client the other day, and they asked me, what do you believe is the biggest reason people leave jobs? Like, what's the biggest reason you see? And I always say misalignment of values or misalignment of aspirations. We've all heard that phrase. We've gone as far as they can go, or actually this person's taken us as far as they can. Actually, we need specialist help in that area. So just in terms of that values piece and that culture piece, how do you go about creating those? Because I think that within we're people, of course, we all have our own values, don't we? But they're not necessarily completely the same as those of the organization we're launching. So what is that process?
And you know what, it's a process that I've developed over years and years of doing it, so I kind of know it works. And call it facilitated conversations. So our way of working is not to sit with a leadership team in a darkened room and them to put up a load of values on a board and go, right, that's it. That's our values. We're going to share them with everybody. And I'll be honest, that's what a lot of businesses do. And I think that's a huge mistake. It's really important, if you're going to design those values, to involve everybody in creating them. So we run sort of like small workshops with everybody. So the leadership team, the management team, and the employee team. And even if that's just a business owner who's starting out, we could do it with that one person. But it's really important then to share those values with everybody. So we do those workshops with people, and we talk to them about values. What do we mean by values? And it's things like, you know, when you choose your friends. You know, if you take it back to choosing your friends' values, 9 times out of 10 are going to align with you, and that with your values, that's why you get on. So we talk about values, we get them to think about what their personal values are, and then we start to say, okay, so what about at work? What does values look like at work? What kind of people do you want to be working with? What are the things you want to see other people exhibiting when you work alongside them? And of course, all those things that often come up are things like respect and trust and honesty. But you'd be surprised, depending on the culture of that business, sometimes really different things come up. So our job then is, we've done those workshops with everybody, and my job is then to pull together what everybody said and try and come up with a consensus or a kind of a majority view or opinion. So we might come up with 3 values, we might come up with 5, we might come up with 6. Depending on what people have said, we share a draft with the leadership team, the management team, and the employee team. We share a draft, and we tweak it, we refine it, and then that's it, we roll it out. So we've done quite a lot of work to get to that point, and then we launch the values, and then we'll be making sure they're embedded in things like the recruitment process or the annual review process. So it's making sure they then run through everything that that business does.
No, absolutely. Well, it really, really flashbacks. So similar to you, as you know, we set up 11 years ago in our business, very similar time. Do you know what? 2 years in, we had an away day with the team, and we sat down and we did exactly that and planned the values together. And do you know what? It was the single biggest thing we've ever done in our business. And we now have monthly one-to-ones with all of the team. And well, we've always had monthly one-to-ones with the team. And people often say to me, that's a lot of time having a monthly one-to-one. But actually, every month, the part of this self-assessment is actually something relevant to their role, but then also the alignment to values. Yeah. And it really enables us to ensure that we're all on the same page. So I definitely back you in terms of that point.
Yeah.
It's so key. How do you ensure that values are being constantly monitored? Because I think that an organization with 200 staff may have exactly the same values as they did on that first day, but it may change over a period of time as they enter new markets and develop and grow. How do you ensure that values are constantly looked at and mission statement builds into that?
Yeah, I think it's like everything that you create. To me, it's a work in progress, isn't it? It's making sure that you reflect back on it. Maybe it's an annual task that you put on your calendar. So every January, let's check in. I mean, we did it, funnily enough, as a team. I want to say about 2 years ago, we reviewed our values and I said, well, are they still kind of relevant? Are they still fit for purpose? So I think it's important you kind of diarize it to actually review it and check it. But, you know, the biggest thing for me is your leadership team and your management team. Are they, I hate to say it, but walking the walk and talking the talk? Because if you've got a set of values that you've all agreed upon, but let's just say you've got one or two people who really are not living those values and are not demonstrating the behaviours or acting out the way that those values say you should. If you as a manager or a leader are ignoring it, that's your culture going down the pan. And that's, for me, the biggest part of the monitoring is down to your management, your leadership team, but also sometimes the employee team. Because one of the things we discuss when we launch the value is how are we going to make sure that these stay true and that we're living them and they really do mean something. And we often say to employees, what would you do if you see somebody not living out the values? Sometimes, depending on the culture of the business, employees will be happy to call it out and talk to that person directly. But a lot of businesses, people are worried about, I don't think I've got the confidence to do that. I don't think I've got the right or the empowerment or whatever it might be. I can't do that. Okay, so how do you escalate it if somebody isn't living those values? So I think it's down to everybody in the business to make sure that the values are being lived. But predominantly, it's down to that management and leadership team to make sure they're addressing it when they're not being lived and dealing with it. You know, because we all have that person, don't we, occasionally, that isn't living up to values. But if you allow it to creep, that's where your culture starts to fall down.
Absolutely. Do you know what? Just in terms of that calling out piece, I was at an event not so long ago, and there was a very successful business owner, very, very big team. And one of the things they introduced very early on is that's below the line, that's above the line. And it could be about values. Mm-hmm. It could be about standards. They've grown very, very, very quickly. And it just becomes almost like saying hello, like so regularly a day. Oh, that's below the line. That presentation is below the line, or those habits are below the line, or this is below the line.
And they deal with it.
Exactly
and
that.
Nip it in the bud.
Exactly that. Really, really clever. Really, really clever. So Emma, I'm really keen to kind of continue with this foundations piece, and then I'm keen to move on to the next stage of the business. But I think one of the things we very often see in the STEM space, and there definitely isn't a one-size-fits-all, I think we learn this in business, but actually, if you were to look at the percentage of introvert founders in STEM compared to potentially, I don't know, recruitment, I imagine...
Slightly extrovert, Ben, maybe in your sector.
Exactly. Yeah. So being introvert... I imagine there's a different, you need to have a slightly different people strategy in terms of that leadership piece. What do you see in this space, and what would be your advice or some things maybe for our listeners to think about?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think you're right. I know it's a generalization, but I think most people in the STEM sector would recognize that their kind of personality profile, if you want to call it that, is slightly on that introvert side. So they probably struggle with the people side of things. It's not their forte. Their forte is being brilliant at the science, the technology, the engineering, or the mathematics, isn't it? That's what they're brilliant at.
Absolutely. So
for me, it's about giving them the knowledge, because people like that really like to learn and they like to learn new things. So it's giving them the knowledge, first of all, And then it's about giving them the skills and the confidence to start actually dealing with some of those people things. So it's not saying you've got to be a fantastic people manager or people leader, but what you need to recognize are these are some of the things that you need to do, and we'll give you the skills and the confidence to deal with them. But I also think if you're a leader or a manager in that STEM sector, it's really recognizing that perhaps it isn't your forte. You're going to work at it and you're going to try and get better at it. It's not your forte. And that's why having somebody, whether it's an outsourced HR professional to help and support you and coach you maybe through those things as and when they happen, or maybe you get your, you know, depending on your size, you actually employ somebody, whether it's part-time or full-time, to be that expert for you. So I think it's recognizing it's not your strong set, your skill set, and having that outsourced support or a permanent person to help you with those areas you're just going to struggle with. But you can get better at them. Of course, we can all do that, can't we, with some knowledge, skills and training.
Absolutely. How much of a leader does a founder need to be? I think that's always an interesting debate, isn't it? Which so many of us discuss. But I think quite regularly it's so common that somebody sets up a STEM business because they are absolutely so passionate about stem cell research. Let's be generic here for Oxfordshire. Yeah. And they really enjoy the lab work. They really enjoy the research. But because they've got this really great idea and because they're driven, they've set up this wonderful biotech. How much of the leadership and the leading from the front do they need to do from a people perspective? I think it's probably another debate from a funding perspective, isn't it? But let's focus on people.
Yeah. And you know what? That is a really good question. And I'm going to answer it in two parts, if that's okay. So that's one of those questions that you said you might ask me a difficult question, because there will be some founders who are brilliant at that biotech and who can be a leader as well, because I do think the leadership is really important. If you're not leading from the front, if you're not communicating well with your people, if you don't have the culture, the values, you're not dealing with those people issues as and when they come up, everything starts to crumble and fall apart. So you definitely need to have leadership if you're going to have a business that grows, absolutely, without a doubt. But what we've seen in some of our STEM clients, and I don't know whether you've seen this, Ben, is that sometimes the founder recognizes that they need somebody to help them with that, and they might appoint an MD, or they might appoint an ops director or something of that nature, because they recognize that I'm really good at doing the R&D, for example, or I'm really good at going out and getting investors, but what I'm not good at is doing that leadership piece.
Yes.
So that's what we've seen actually in some of our clients that have grown, is that the founder often starts to take a different role or play a different role as the business grows, and they then appoint somebody who can be that leadership person at the front, because I definitely think you have to have a really good leader in every business.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Emma, thank you so much for your thoughts so far. Let's continue the conversation after this.
Introducing you to local trusted experts. This is The Business Brunch, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we're talking about a topic that I absolutely love. So we're talking about people in STEM. And to do that, we're joined by a wonderful, wonderful local HR professional, Emma Browning, who runs a great HR consultancy called Meraki HR. So Emma, I think we've spoken quite a lot about that startup phase, and we've spoken quite a lot about the foundations, both in terms of values, in terms of leadership, and we've touched on recruitment. I bet you couldn't guess I'm going to touch on recruitment one more time, if that's okay. So just under the recruitment umbrella, I think that we were speaking about introverts before, or extroverts, and an interview process must look very different for a scientist, particularly early career scientists, to a salesperson or a HR person or a marketeer. Can you just maybe share some pointers or maybe some of the things to consider for STEM businesses when looking at their recruitment strategy, and how that could potentially differ in order to give each staff member or each potential employee the platform to show the very best version of themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. I mean, any recruitment process needs to be designed to allow that person to demonstrate the skills and the behaviours that they've got, that they bring to that business.
Absolutely.
So for me, a good recruitment process is all about making that person feel relaxed and comfortable, because then you are going to get the best of them. But unlike recruiting for a salesperson, where you might have lots of questions around their sales experience and how they've demonstrated, you know, their success or their achievements, what figures have they achieved? And of course, you can back all of that up, hopefully, with references if somebody will give you a reference. But you should be getting that person to demonstrate that they can do what they say they can, whether that's sales or whether that's a scientist. So in science, what we're doing is, or in STEM, I should say, we're very much looking at the job description. And we work with the client to say, okay, so if we had to think about what the key skills were here, tell me what the key skills are for this person. So we've got a job description, but really talk us through it, help us to understand it. And then we might look at them demonstrating some technical skills. We might design an assessment, or it might be a task that they have to do. For example, if they're going into a lab or they've got to write reports, can they write reports? Are they accurate? You know, how do they deal with those things? So we design some form of a task that allows them to demonstrate their scientific or technical skills. And then we would also be looking at the behaviours. Because whenever we talk to a client about the skills and what's really important, and I'm sure you find this, Ben, there's maybe one or two skills, but there, I bet you there's the list of behaviours that mean that they're a good team worker or they fit into the business is much longer than the skills list. So the behavioural piece for me comes from asking really good questions around how have they demonstrated these behaviours, or possibly even the values that again fit with those values that they've created. So we design sort of competency-based questions that allow them to demonstrate those behaviours or values that are really important to the client. So it will be a mix of technical skills, can they demonstrate, can they do a task, and it will be behavioural as well.
And just in terms of the onboarding process, because I think that so regularly businesses have a really great recruitment process, but then actually maybe forget that onboarding process and that first day or first 90 days in the role. Talk to me about what makes a really good onboarding process. And I appreciate we've spoken a lot about values, haven't we? I appreciate values are going to be a big part, but what are some of the things to consider to make that really good onboarding process and really give those foundations to enable that new employee to be able to thrive?
Do you know what? I would say the biggest thing that we see that goes wrong, exactly as you said, is they've recruited somebody. So it's like, phew, we've got this person who's starting. Brilliant. And on day one, they sit them in front of a laptop or a computer. They get them to read a load of stuff, and that's their induction process. And then that poor person 2 weeks later is either phoning you or me and saying, oh, my goodness, you know, I'm really not happy. This isn't going the way I thought it would. So there needs to be some time and thought going into that induction process. For me, it is about breaking it down into chunks. So it's thinking about, okay, what are the key things that this person needs to learn or be able to do at the end of month one? And again, the same for month two, month three. So we try and do it over a 3 month period. And the reason we do that is the biggest mistake we also see is people throwing too much at somebody in week one. So they do everything in week one, like, hit, you know, we're going to introduce you to every single person in the business, whether that's five of them or 155. They won't remember anybody's name by day two. So it's about breaking things down into really small bite-sized chunks. So let's think about those important things for week one, week two, week three, week four. So probably really spreading things out makes a successful induction program or onboarding process. But trying to do too much too soon is overwhelm. It's too much information. People aren't going to retain it. And I think the other thing for me is also thinking about introducing different ways of learning in that onboarding process. Some people love reading and learning that way. So maybe, I don't know, there's documents that they need to read or there's research that they need to do. The other side of it is they might prefer watching things. They might prefer actually being in a room with a person. So it's trying to, over that onboarding process, give them different opportunities to learn in different ways, because again, they're more likely to retain that information if we're delivering it in a different format. And it might be that that business then finds that with that certain type of role, there's a format or a way of delivering the onboarding process that works really well. And it might be all video, or it might be all one-to-one sessions with people. And I think the other last part I'm going to say on that is, throughout that onboarding process, test what they've learned is sticking. So, you know, give them things to do. So if you've taught them how to do something on a system, for argument's sake, check back in 3 or 4 weeks later, maybe give them an interesting task to do that then cements that learning. But you also then know that they've understood and they've grasped whatever it is that you've been trying to teach them. So, yeah. So spreading it out, not too much information at the beginning, because otherwise it's information overload or overwhelm. Different ways of learning and testing that learning has stuck and is cemented.
No, absolutely. Some really, really great points there. And actually, I think that for those outside the world of people will think, oh, well, that's simple. They'll be fine. But actually, it makes such an impact, doesn't it? And yeah. do you know what? One of the things we do in our business, which is not rocket science, is not unique to us, but we will just be really sticky with the candidate. So from that first conversation, we will keep them updated. If we haven't heard back, we'll still go back to them and let them know we've not heard back. And throughout the interview process, we will probably call them too much, but actually we will keep in touch with them.
Communication is key, though. Yeah.
If you're stressed about the interview, call us at 10 o'clock at night. I'd much rather you call us than worry about the interview the next day. And then actually, I think that within a lot of candidates I speak to that aren't our candidates, who we find their CV and we contact them about a role.
Yeah.
The amount of times I hear, oh, well, I do have a role to go to, but I've not heard back from that employer for 4 weeks. So maybe I am interested in hearing about your role. And that's just a simple communication piece. So honestly, yeah. I can't say how important that piece is. Just in terms of, there's been a lot of studies, hasn't there, in terms of the longevity of a staff member or the happiness of a staff member if they've got a genuine friend at work. And I appreciate this is a little bit of a fluffy one, isn't it? But there's so many studies behind it. How do you create that friend piece at work? How do you cultivate that, particularly within the STEM space?
Well, that's really it. So I'm a qualified Gallup strengths coach, and that, so have you heard of the Gallup Q12?
I have, yes.
And that's obviously one of the questions. I think it's number 7. I have a best friend at work. And this is a concept that I really, really believe in and really think is important. Having that best friend at work is that person that you can talk to if you've got a problem. You can go to them if you're stuck and not feel embarrassed. So that best friend at work is really important. So how do you promote that? So another good thing that you could perhaps put into your onboarding process is a buddy for that person, so that they have got that confidant to go to in the first 3 months. And quite often what we see is that bond and that friendship develops past the induction phase. So we really do try and look at things like demographics. So if somebody's joining us who's in their 20s, can we put them with somebody else who's of a similar age to them, you know, who maybe started in the business 2 or 3 years ago and has now maybe got a promotion? So, you know, they're there and they're going to support that person. But how you encourage that is quite hard, actually, because sometimes you have colleagues at work and they maybe don't become your best friend, but you can still encourage people to socialize outside of work. But it's really important that you understand what it is they like to do socially outside of work, so that you're giving them opportunities to socialise in a way that they want to, rather than it feeling forced and a bit fake. Because, you know, it's the classic, oh, we've got a team away day, but it's what the MD loves doing. They've not thought about what it is their staff actually like to do. I don't know, they've put on a track day at Silverstone because that's their hobby and everybody else is going but doesn't really want to go. So I think it's getting to know your team and your people so that you give them those social opportunities that fit with what they'd like to do. So that encourages friendships, but the buddy at the beginning could be a really good way as well to get those people to make their friends at work.
Absolutely. Emma, I'm keen to be a little bit, I guess, kind of negative is the wrong word, but I can't think of a better one. So let's use the word negative here. So what do you do if something isn't going well? So whether that be quite early on, let's talk early on, and then, because I think it's very different, somebody that's been here for 5 years to maybe 5 days. But what do you do if, as a leader, you don't feel it's going quite the way you wanted? Yeah. You're not quite sure. How do you go about that?
Well, to me, and, you know, same in my business, you know, it's about communication and it's about dealing with those things and nipping them in the bud. So for me, when you've got a new starter, number one, we encourage all of our clients to have a 6-month probation period, not three. And this is really important, particularly with the up and coming legal changes that are likely to come in next October, because we know that day one rights of fair dismissal could be changed, the 2-year rule could be changed to day one. So that means you've got to get it right from the beginning. So your recruitment process and finding the right person through somebody like you is really important. But then what you do with them in that first 3 to 6 months and that onboarding is also key. So having a proper probation review process is really, really important in that. My view would be, a bit like you said, the month-to-month reviews, but in that first 6 months, certainly in the first 3 months, I would be meeting with my person every week. I want to know how they're getting on. I want to know what things they're getting stuck on, what they're struggling with. Because then if I've got them, if I've got to give them some feedback that's not negative feedback, I call it constructive feedback. You're going to have to give them some constructive feedback, aren't you, at some points? Because if you don't deal with it in the moment, that's when those things become a bigger problem, and then it's a real issue. So if you're meeting with people weekly in that first 3 months at least, you're going to spot any problems and you deal with it there and then. And it is about having honest conversations. We've got a framework that we teach our clients. So it's a really good, easy framework to follow. So it's discuss the circumstances, you know, what's the example that you can give them? What was the impact of what they were doing? So I don't know, did it have an impact on a customer or did it mean that your R&D costs more? And then lastly, what can we do about it? So example, impact, but what can we actually do to make that better for next time? So it's focusing on the action and moving forward. If you do that, when those little things happen, you don't get the big things coming along to bite you.
Absolutely. Some really, really, really good advice. Emma, thank you so much for such honest insight that you're providing our listeners. I'm sure their notepads are nice and full. So this is The Business Brunch, and we're going to continue the conversation with Emma after this.
The Business Brunch Podcast with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to The Business Brunch. I can't believe how quickly the last almost hour has gone. Emma has provided so much insight. If you are just tuning in today, we're joined by Emma Browning of Meraki HR. And she's a local expert who has a lot of STEM clients in the local market. So I definitely recommend having a look at her website and following Emma on LinkedIn. Emma, I'm keen for another big question, and we touched on this a lot at the start. But now let's talk about scaling businesses, and let's put that context there. So you're scaling or you're big, and I appreciate big isn't quantifiable, but let's just enable our listeners to get a a little bit. What makes really good people strategy? What if you were to work with, as I'm sure you do with all of your all of your clients, but you're working with a scaling business, and that client comes to you and says, Emma, I really want market leading people strategy. I want something that gives really good foundations and I'm really able to grow. What are some of the things to consider? What would be some of those things that you'd work with those clients on?
Yeah, well, we've got something that we call our high performing teams program, and we've broken it down into 7 steps, actually.
Amazing.
Which is how we create the strategy with them. So we look at each of those 7 steps, and it's, you know, everything from your recruitment strategy, so resourcing. So if you are going to achieve X amount of revenue or product or whatever, we work it back to what does your people structure need to look like? Where are the gaps? Where are we going to find those people? So it starts with structure and resourcing. We then move on to looking at employee engagement. So how are we going to make sure we're keeping people engaged with the business? And that might be a variety of things because it isn't a one size fits all. So we'll look at engagement, we'll look at developing people and how we get them ready for those roles that they may be able to move up to in the business. We then look at a retention strategy.
Amazing.
So what are the things that we know from working with you or your business, or if we haven't worked with them before, we'll go and ask people, what are the things that make them stay here? You know, what is it they love about that company? So we create a retention strategy because that's really important. We would also talk to them about performance and how they're going to manage performance. So we kind of have those 7 kind of stages, and we look at each stage with them, and then we develop their people strategy for them. And that will include things, KPIs as well, that they're going to monitor and improve. So for example, if they've done the Gallup Q12, I don't know, in January 2025, what's the number? What's the numbers that we're trying to achieve? How are we going to get there? What's the action plan? And that would be part of their engagement and retention strategy, for example. So we work through those 7 stages with them, we look at everything together, and we create a bespoke strategy for them. But it'd take a long time for us to go into each of those now. But there's definitely a few areas you need to look at.
Amazing. Amazing. I asked a 2-part question earlier about challenges in terms of performance. And let's now go one step further in terms of challenges with long-term employees. The business changes or employee performance changes, or actually, I think within the STEM sector, there's often very scaling businesses, but there's also businesses that rely on funding and redundancies happen. How do you communicate that? Let's talk about the masses firstly. So there is potentially a funding issue. There is potentially going to be redundancies. At what point do you communicate that to staff? At what point?
Yeah.
And how do you go about that communication strategy? Of course, the best advice is work with you, Emma. But give some insight. Is that okay?
Yeah. And it's really difficult because, you know, I run a business myself, and so do you, Ben. And sometimes things might be going on in the background. And I do believe our job is to shield people from some of that worry or concern that sometimes we do have as business leaders or founders. However, there comes a point where you've got to tell people what's going on, and it shouldn't be too late. It's really, really important as a business leader to think about so if you are thinking about making redundancies, number one, please do get professional advice because you don't want to get it wrong. But you've got to think about, why is this happening? So if I was a person, an employee, I'd want to know, why are we in this position? So that communication piece is something we often work with clients on. What's the justification for what you're doing? How have we got here? What have we done prior to getting to this point? So have we, I don't know, reduced our spend on contractors, for example? Have we banned overtime? Have we stopped recruiting? So what are the cost saving measures that we have also been putting in place to avoid us getting to this point? Because people want to understand, how have we got here, what's happened, but also what have we done to prevent us being here? Because that just starts to help them to understand what it is you're telling them. The other thing for me then, so it is communicating a really clear message, and that might be a script, because if you're a business owner going in to tell people what's happened and why and what's going to happen next, you're going to be really nervous.
Absolutely.
And there's a real danger of getting it wrong. And people come out of that meeting going, what happened? Yeah. I don't know. What have they just told us? And sometimes people are afraid to use the word redundancy. So, you know, telling people that they're at risk of redundancy, telling them why we've got to that point, telling them what's going to happen next. It needs to be really clear. It needs to be not waffly. And it needs to be really easy to understand. So my advice is you tell people verbally, but you also then need to put that in writing so that they've got something to take away with them. Because if you're told your role is at risk of redundancy, even on a one-to-one basis or in a group, I can tell you now that by the time you've walked out the door, your brain will have just kind of gone, I really don't understand this. So it's really important you follow it up with something that confirms what you've said.
But no, absolutely.
Really difficult conversations to have. So very important you get it right.
Absolutely. And I think I'm just going to add one point there and get the really great advice. You know, work with somebody like you if you don't have that expertise internally.
Yeah.
Emma, we are coming to the very, very final stint of the show. And we've probably got 2 minutes left at a real push. So there's pressure on you. I want to ask you two questions. Finally, the final two is, I'm sure a lot of people listening will have been really impressed with your knowledge and your insight and ways of working. So if somebody would like to have a conversation about instructing you or working with you, how can they work with you? That's my first question. You've probably got a minute for that. Sorry, I feel like the time police.
Oh my God.
The news is coming.
Pressure is on. How can they work with us? Well, we work it with people in lots and lots of different ways. But I would honestly say the first thing is, if you kind of like what I've said and our approach, book a call with me. Easiest way to do that is to go to the website, which is www.merakihr.com. And I'm going to spell that MERAKIHR.com. And on the homepage, there's a book a call button. So see our diary, book a call in. That's probably the easiest thing.
Amazing. And then last but not least, I think you've given so much insight to our listeners this morning. But I think that one of the things we do like to do on the show is really just ask our listeners to get their highlighter out and just remind them of a top tip of everything that's been covered this morning, or indeed something I've not asked you about. If you were to give one top tip to our listeners to leave the show with, what's your lasting tip?
Okay, so I think the biggest thing from a people point of view for me, and you're going to like this, Ben, because it relates to recruitment, because I think everything comes down to who you recruit and getting that right. Because if you've got great people, you've got great business. So if in doubt, so if you've got any doubts in your mind about that person, don't recruit them. Absolutely. Listen to your gut instinct, because it is 99% of the time right.
Amazing. Amazing. Great advice. And advice, as you've said, Emma, that I couldn't agree more with. That is the end of the show. So if you are just tuning in, you've missed a great one. So do head over to the Get Radio Facebook page and listen back. And do check out Emma Browning of Meraki HR, a really great local HR consultancy. So thank you so much, Emma. We are going to be back next week with a brand new guest. And we're going to be joined by Gemma Kubit of Avenue Coaching. And we're continuing on the people theme. So we're going to talk about how to get the most out of your people. And just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show every Sunday on the radio at 11 a.m. Or indeed online. And do look out for the podcast version, which is available on every major podcast platform and is released on the Monday morning. And if you would like to see my lovely guest, do look out for the video version, which is released on the Get Radio Facebook page and the website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing here in Oxfordshire, do enjoy, and we'll see you next week.